What's up, guys? It's Cody here, and before we kick off the show, I want to talk real quick about our sponsor, Trojan Brand Condoms, the number one most trusted condom brand. Can you believe this is true? 70% of men don't even know that different condom shapes exist. So it makes sense that those same guys have issues with condoms because the wrong fit can make them super uncomfortable. You ever try to put the wrong cap on a pen? It doesn't work. Or you end up with ink everywhere. That's where Trojan saves the day, with over 30 different varieties of condoms to choose from, offering the right fit for the right guy. Trojan also has a whole range of pleasure-enhancing products like lubes and vibes, that's what they call vibrators, I just learned that, that'll unleash your sexual confidence. But we can get to those later. In the meantime, pick up a box of Trojan condoms wherever you get your condoms, and of course, enjoy the show. You don't have to have a condom on now to listen to the show, by the way, just, you know, if you have sex. Hey, what's up? I'm Cody Ko, and welcome to The Pleasure Is Ours, the podcast in which we examine some of the worst advice people hear their whole lives and try to make it better. I guarantee you all of these pieces of advice have been marketed to you over and over again as good, but you have been lied to, my friend, and it is my job to explain how and why.
Hey, man, you having trouble with life? Well, let me give you some advice. First of all the shit that they all told you was right is not right. I'll explain. Just give me a second of your time. You see, they tell you just to be yourself. But what happens if you're fucking lame? I'm just kidding. You're not lame. You're a treasure. I'll show you how to get there. It would be our pleasure. Let me give you some advice.
Fake it till you make it might be the most widely used and abused phrase we ever dissect on this show. But this one really begs the question, is this a coherent thought or does it just rhyme? Let's get into it. This one is interesting to me because I don't hate it. Like, for example, no one that puts proficient in Microsoft Excel on their resume has ever attempted to actually make a spreadsheet. That's just a widely accepted social contract we've all agreed to, and it's a victimless crime. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, if you pretend you're a doctor to pick up chicks, you may find yourself attempting CPR on someone's grandma, Lloyd Christmas style. And now your love interest has gone, and Marjorie is on her way to the pearly gates. What I'm trying to say is you gotta choose your lies wisely, or the ruse will come crashing down on you like a house of cards. Today, I'm joined by one of my absolute favorite funny people in the game. You know him from his live performances all over the US, as well as YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and Vine. You guys can't see me right now, but I'm pouring one out for Vine. I'm talking, of course, about my boy, Drew Gooden. Welcome to the show, Drew.
Who else?
I'm talking, of course, about my close boy.
Yes.
Drew Gooden. We're close boys. I haven't seen you in a long time.
Yeah, proximity-wise, not so close. I'm on the other end of the country. But relationship-wise, I think very highly of you. And based on that intro, it sounds like you returned that sentiment to me. So thanks.
No worries. Yeah, no worries. I was reading off a thing, but Totally. I feel that way, vaguely.
Did you write it at least? Or someone else wrote that?
Someone else. But I mean, I feel pretty good about it.
Well, wait, who wrote it? I want to be their friend. They seem to really like me.
I'll give you Dave's number. You guys can...
Okay, Dave. Awesome. Oh, I know Dave.
Yeah, Dave. Your close boy, Dave?
Mm-hmm. We are close boys.
Listen, I haven't seen you since we were both in Louisville.
Oh, that's right.
And we were at that bar that has golfing inside, the golf simulator, which that's when you know you're at a dope establishment, is when they have an indoor golf simulator.
Yeah, that is the only bar I've ever been to that had an indoor golf simulator. And also that night, I had the best pizza I've ever had in my life. It was just Papa John's, but I was drunk, and it was after a show, and you always feel great after a show. And well, like two drinks, best pizza ever. And like,
let me ask you this. We were talking a little bit that night about performing, and because that was you and Danny's first tour, one of one. And you guys wrote it and rehearsed it and then performed all over the United States, right?
Yes.
And this is like, correct. And it was a comedy show.
That's a matter of perspective. Yes, it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be a comedy show. I think it turned out pretty funny. I think it was a learning experience. A lot of things we planned. It actually evolved a lot as it went. We cut some things out. After the first show, there were things we did in the first show we never did again. But overall, fun experience. And I think we're both pretty proud of the end product.
But I feel like this is a good segue into what I was just talking about in the intro. Is that like, what did you feel like? Were you faking it when you first got up on stage? Because it's a tough. I mean, I feel like a lot of people, you know, they're trained. They spend their entire life performing to get to a point where they're able to do a show like that. But I feel like with YouTube, it's just a little like shortcut, and we like to just like, oh, now we're on stage. Hi.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost insulting to other performers how quickly we're just like, oh, we made some videos on the internet. We can do live shows in front of 1,000+ people.
Yeah, we're gonna do it now, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
We're just gonna do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're gonna do it.
Yeah, never done it before. All the shows are already sold out. That's how. Yeah, it's like a slap in the face to these like trained theater performers. But there's a lot of faking it involved. Every single night I was extremely nervous. That's just sort of the state I'm in through most of life. But especially when you have like an 8 o'clock show and you have nothing to do all day but think about everything that could go wrong, you just kind of have to lie to yourself and say everything's going to be okay, even when you know deep down there's a chance it might not be.
Totally. That was always the worst for me too. I would get so nervous and even trying to work, like be productive during the day, because you have all day just to do whatever the fuck. But I could never get this nagging feeling out of my mind that's like, you're going to go up on stage at the end of this day and you're probably going to fuck up.
Yeah.
And the only way, I mean, it sort of dulled the more we did it.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Never went away. But I actually feel like I felt this in most of my life. Like even when I was a software engineer, my very first job in LA, I thought I was way underqualified for. And I got the job and I showed up just nervous as fuck my very first day. And I ended up being, you know, it ended up being a great job and I got along with the team just fine. But I feel like this is just a reoccurring theme in my life, just completely just being like a fraud.
Yeah, that's a good word. I was going to say going in blind maybe, but no, yeah, we're just straight up frauds.
Frauds, we're criminals.
Yeah, no, I had a job like that too, where I had no qualifications whatsoever. My dad's friend hooked me up with a job I was very underqualified for. It was like, there was carpentry involved, wiring of like LED lights and stuff, things I had never done in my life before. And I just kind of showed up and pretended like I belonged. But
wait, when was this?
That was when I was like 23. My job history is snow cone restaurant, fast food restaurant, different fast food restaurant, carpenter.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. The natural
progression.
Path.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was always coming. But
I feel like the Venn diagram of snow cone skills and carpentry, there's actually a lot in the middle.
Mm-hmm. It's almost entirely just one big circle. You work with power tools. That's actually about it. I remember making snow cones. We had a big machine that I was scared of because if I put my hand in there, it would not come out. So my dad's friend who hired me was doing me a huge favor because I just wanted a decent paying job that wasn't fast food. But all the other people working there were like these older men who'd been doing it for 20, 30 years. And they're just like, man, they would get so annoyed at me. They'd be like, they'd ask me to hand them a tool and I didn't know what it was. And they'd describe it to me. And I'd be like, I still don't know what that is.
Oh, so like they didn't get mad at you because they were like gatekeeping the construction job.
That might have been part of it. There might have been some resentment where it's like, this fucking kid.
You can't just walk in here and use tools.
Yeah. You got to go to carpentry school for 10 years. I don't know what the normal procedure would be. But yeah, no, it was just because I was bad at everything and it made their job even harder.
Like, I feel bad almost when we did the Montreal Comedy Festival. Talking to like, you know, and speaking with like legitimate comedians, like after the show, talking about like touring and stuff like that. And I just felt like a fucking fraud. Like they're like, what, you can just do this now?
Did they say stuff like that to you or you just felt that from them?
They didn't say that. Yeah, nobody actually ever said it, but I feel like they're thinking that, you know?
Right, right. I was going to say, if they were just like, just gave you like the cold shoulder, that'd be really funny. And I guess they kind of deserve to do that. I don't know. That's how I would feel so inferior in a room like that. I'm glad that I was not in that situation.
What about like when you started doing content? You used to edit for someone, right?
I did. Yeah. I edited for Thomas Sanders.
Yes. Thomas Sanders. And did you know how to edit before that? Like, is that something you just jumped into?
Well,
and just...
that's actually another good thing for this topic, because it was very similar. And I guess Thomas is hearing this now. I did have some familiarity with like Adobe Premiere, but I learned so much stuff from doing that job for him, for editing, from editing for him, because it'd be like, he'd be like, hey, can you do this? And I'd be like, yes, I know how to do that. And then I would Google how to do that and then figure it out. There was a lot of faking it, but it always worked out. If I had the editing experience that I have now, if I had this experience then, I could have edited everything like 3 times as fast.
Yeah.
But still, I got everything done for the most part when I needed to. And I learned a lot in the process. So thank you, Thomas, for that job.
Thomas, if you're listening.
Which I know you are.
Don't sue me. I knew a little bit about editing.
Wait, I could get sued for this? Shit, cut that out.
I feel like that's the best way to approach something. New things, new challenges. Mm-hmm. Is you got to scratch the surface, get a little bit, get informed a little bit, and then just dive the fuck in. And that's how you learn.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the best way to learn shit.
You just hope that you get the opportunity to do that, because a lot of employers will not have the same mindset where they're like, oh, you kind of know what you're doing, but not really. I'd rather hire someone else with, you know, 10 years of experience.
My very first job in LA, I started the job on like a off week because they pay you every 2 weeks. And so I started and I didn't get paid for 3 weeks, and we got this apartment and I had to pay rent. And so someone texted me, or I answered a job posting or something for an app that someone wanted built. And I answered it and I said, I can do this, even though I couldn't. But I said, I've never written like a app privately for someone from start to finish before, besides myself. Never done client work before ever, but I said I was a contractor and I was a software guy, and this is what I do. And so he's like, okay, let's do it. The app that I want is a messenger app where my friends and I can send each other pictures of bananas all day. And that's it. Not typing, not anything. Just send, we want to send pictures of bananas to each other.
You know, there's already an app for that. You just have to set that limitation yourself. You could just make a group
chat. I was
chat.
Like, why can't you just do it in iMessage? He's like, it's an inside joke and it would really mean a lot to me.
Okay.
And so I did it somehow. I just went on these programmer forums, figured out how to do it, and I made Bananagram. And that's how I paid my rent the very first week I was in LA.
Wow.
Yeah.
You son of a bitch.
I know. All right, Drew, let's talk about women. You're married, right?
Sure I am.
When you met your wife, did you, were you faking it, you know? Because I feel like when you're on a first date, that's another thing, is you gotta, like, pretend you're way cooler than you are.
Right. Are you saying I'm not cool?
You're cool, but I'm saying...
Jeez. I think more so, I would say, with my previous relationships. I think by the time I got to her, I had kind of had some authentic confidence. Plus, my current wife, as if I had otherwise, my wife as of today. So we met through Vine. We met online and did long distance for a little bit. So our first date was like 4 months in.
Wait, 4 months in, you guys were boyfriend and girlfriend, but like online?
Yes. So we had met online. We FaceTimed. We talked on the phone. I did a lot of, but we didn't actually meet in person until we'd already been talking for about 4 months. And at that point, there's so much built up anticipation and pressure. No amount of faking confidence in the world could get me to feel confident that night. It was like, so I was so nervous. She was so nervous. We also, I picked her up at the airport at like 11 p.m. So we don't even have like a whole day to kind of ease into it. It's like the first time we're seeing each other. It's like, hey, and we're going to go to bed now and see you in the morning. And
good to meet you. You want to head back to my place?
Yeah, it was just, but then, you know, everything was fine the next day. But it was just like, it's, you can be so confident and feel like you really know someone. But then the moment you meet them in person, see them for the first time, it's like, you have no idea what to say. So,
but that's okay though, right? I think the lesson is that both people feel like that probably.
Yeah. And I think it's okay to acknowledge that awkwardness. I think that was a situation where it would have been worse if I was faking it. If I was trying to like, oh, this is normal, this is cool. Having both of us acknowledge the awkwardness of the situation is actually beneficial, I think.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. Because I guess faking it in that sense would be like playing way too confident, like a fuckboy. Like,
yeah. She's like, I'm not sure how to read your emotions. You're just kind of like too cool. And it's like, never mind.
You pick her up at the airport and you're like, yo, should we get out of here? Go someplace more quiet? She's like, well, I would hope so.
Most places are quieter than the place where planes take off from.
So then, and then it blossomed from there.
It did blossom actually pretty quickly. That night was weird, but then the next day we went to Universal Studios, had a very fun day, and it was just kind of smooth sailing from there. And then we got married the next day.
Wow. Again, a classic love story.
Classic love story. 4 months long distance, one night together, then you're married.
I got to say, I feel like one thing that I'm really bad at, that maybe everyone is really bad at, that people fake all the time, is dirty talk. I'm just not a natural at it. And so, and people like it. That's the thing, right? Like when you're with someone, they like to hear it. But you just, especially when you're first starting to like have sex and stuff like that, you just try to replicate what you see in porn.
Which is all wrong. Everything is the opposite of what you should be doing and saying. Yeah. It's the worst frame of reference.
You like that big, my big ass cheeks?
Do you like my
big ass cheeks? Yeah. That's what I say.
I guess. Yeah, no, it's dirty talk is very unnatural. But I do think that's another thing where that generally goes both ways. It's you're both kind of faking the confidence with that, where... And maybe I'm wrong, but in my experience, maybe it's just my awkwardness rubbing off on the other person involved. But it does seem like, you know, trying to take yourself seriously in that moment can sometimes be difficult. And sometimes you just got to laugh.
Have you ever faked an orgasm? I know that's a weird question for, you know, a close boy to ask another close boy.
Sure. Only while... jerking off.
What? What?
No, I just...
I didn't want to insult myself.
Yeah. I felt like I was doing such a good job. I didn't want to make myself think I was inferior. So I just pretended to be done, went, oh, that was great, and then fell right asleep.
Yo, you were so good.
I have never done so in a sexual environment, nor have I needed to. And that's all I'll say about that.
Okay, have you ever done it? Have you ever done it in a non-sexual environment?
Oh, yeah.
I have. I actually have.
Really?
My very first, like, not very first, but one of the first acting classes that I ever took, on the very first day, the teacher made me get up and fake an orgasm in front of the class.
Oh.
Because it was like an exercise in, like, dropping your ego and learning how to, like, just, you know, be yourself and not be embarrassed.
I heard the word class before acting. That just is how it registered in my brain. I was picturing just like a regular class where your teacher made... And I was
like, math, calculus, actually. In junior year. Junior year, the teacher... Cody, why don't you get up and fake an orgasm? Because you just got that question wrong.
Yeah, I faked a lot of orgasms that year. That's interesting. I mean, that is, yeah, that's a good point. Like, I haven't taken like an acting class, but improv, you know, I've taken improv classes. That is sort of letting go of your ego, letting go of yourself. That is an interesting exercise that more people should do. More people should fake an orgasm.
More people should, yes. That actually should be part of your morning routine, actually. I would suggest. People say meditate, and I would say add on to that. Just go ahead and bust a nut, you know, but don't actually. Just fake it.
At the end of the meditation. That's when the meditation climaxes is with a fake orgasm.
Yeah, I feel like that's truly jumping in the deep end. You know, the stuff that they make you do, the warm-ups for an improv or an acting class or something, that's just like, just fucking be weird. Mm-hmm. And drop every guard that you have.
That's kind of what improv is all about, is... fake it till you make it is sort of the mantra of improv, because a lot of times you're thrust into a scene that has no direction or anything. And you just hope that, you know, where I failed in improv a lot was I would come out like kind of timid, but you got to just go 100% into it, even if you don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yes,
and usually
yes,
that confidence is rewarded and things start to make sense.
Yeah.
But if you're just sort of like, both people in the scene are sort of like, I don't know what's happening. It's just never going to go anywhere.
Yeah, I agree. But that's like all the way on the end of the spectrum where you have to give it your all and just not give a fuck. Whereas like, I feel like most jobs, you have to have a little bit of that where you're like, okay, I'm just going to jump in and see what's good. But you have to like also have your shit together a little bit.
Yeah, if you're like a firefighter, you know, you don't want to pretend you know how to put out fires. You're just going to walk into, you're like, do I use my body to put the fire out? He just walks right into it, way too confident. It's not going to end well.
Yeah, I guess there's also a scenario on the complete opposite side where you go on a first date with someone, let's say, and you're like, yeah, I'm vegan. They're like, awesome, me too. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, I love being vegan and eating things that, you know, grow and all that stuff. It's sick.
Yeah, I like to eat grass. And yeah, you have no idea.
Grass, wheat grass.
Sure,
smoothies,
yeah.
Grass of grass.
Mm-hmm.
I like to smoke grass.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
I'm a big time grass smoker.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, she's like, yes, I am too. And then fast forward, what, like a month? And then you're vegan?
yeah, you just are vegan now. Like, you're just stuck. God forbid things go really well, you move in together. Now you're faced with the dilemma of, like, do I continue this lie to preserve the relationship, or do I just come clean knowing that everything could come crashing down?
Yes, and I think the right answer is preserve the lie. Live yes. A lie.
You are in too deep.
You want to fake it till you make it, until you're absolutely living a 100% lie. And you're another person completely.
Yeah. Until, yeah, you physically transform. You have just, you look completely different. I think in general with relationships, there's a lot of examples these days with the state of technology and all that. A lot of examples of people faking aspects about themselves before they even meet, before the relationship even starts.
I feel like that's always been a thing, though. You can do it more now with dating apps. Like if you go on a dating app and you see in their profile, literally, that they're like, I love sailing. Then you can go and be like, you know, you can research sailing before your first date. Whereas before, I feel like it's always been a thing. Someone says, oh, I love hiking. And the other person's like, just in the moment, like, yeah, me too.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck yeah.
I went hiking this morning.
Yeah, I just got, you see, wearing hiking boots right now.
Oh, cool. Where did you hike?
Oh, the Appalachians.
That's awesome. You should take me there. I've always wanted to hike that. That's my dream.
Do you want to go right now?
Yes.
See, it's going well.
So, yeah, things are going great. I think we might seal the deal later tonight on top of the Appalachian Mountains.
Wait till you hear my dirty talk, man. All hiking themes.
Who's getting fucked on a mountain? I am.
Yeah. You like my granola?
What? That's what that is? I thought that was your balls.
Try and find the M&Ms. I don't know. You know, yeah. I have no idea what I'm talking about anymore, but
it's okay. That's the point.
I'm faking it. I'm faking it this podcast right now.
I was going to say, you suck at this, but your confidence in spite of that is very admirable.
Well, we didn't say this, but you had to sit there and watch me butcher the intro like 3 times because I kept stuttering.
I was going to ask while watching that, now that the cat is out of the bag and the audience knows that you fucked up royally in front of your esteemed guest, is that what it's like recording YouTube videos for you, where when you have given yourself a script, you end up having to say things like 10, 15 times sometimes? Not all the time, but sometimes it's just like, my worst nightmare is someone finding an unedited YouTube video of me where I repeat the same thing like 15 times. It's so embarrassing to think about people seeing that.
It's embarrassing, but here's what you got to do. Have an orgasm.
Oh, right.
Right
before.
When you start filming, bust a nut. Don't actually fake it, but that'll drop the embarrassment and then you won't feel that anymore.
Yeah, you have that fake post-nut clarity where suddenly all of your inhibitions are gone.
No, I feel the same way. I have an editor now. And when I first found him, I would send him footage and be like, I'm so sorry for 5 minutes and 7 minutes and 10 minutes in. Like, you're going to see these me do. Now I just, whenever it happens, I just apologize to him, like, on camera. Because I know he's going to watch the footage. So I'm like, sorry about that. I'm an idiot. Let me try and take it again. And it doesn't, like, it's like anything. Once you just do it for a few times, then you're like, you realize that he's not going to judge that hard. It's like the most human thing ever, like, fucking up and then being like, God damn it, and trying it again.
Yeah, that is extremely human.
Like, it's just so fragile, and in the, like, us as people that want to, like...
Seem cool online.
Yeah, except you took the words out of my mouth, brother.
Yeah.
All right, Drew, shut up for a second, because we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, me and Drew are going to tweak this piece of advice in real time for y'all. Okay, so I know when you start out buying condoms, it can be a pretty intimidating thing, right? You're in the store looking at all the options and you're like, I don't know what to choose. There's so many different, like, they're all different colors. I don't know, what is it, ribbed, non-ribbed? Do I want one with a flavor? Who's the flavor for, me or her? I don't know. It can be difficult finding the one that's right for you. For example, if I tried on a Magnum, it would just kind of droop off. It would be shitty. And that's why Trojan created All the Feels. It's a new starter variety pack where you can try a bunch of different condoms to help you find the right shape, fit, and sensation. Most people that don't like condoms just haven't found the right fit. And that's why All the Feels is great. It lets you try the classic fitting Trojan condom, a feel you can trust to do the job. They've also got a thin feel condom for added sensitivity. Hello. And if you find condoms are too tight or restrictive, if you got a hog, try the full pleasure feel for more space to move around. Explore, you know, jimmy around a little bit in there. So head on over to your nearest Walmart or walmart.com to grab a pack of All the Feels. Okay, we're back. And listen, this one, I thought about it. And this one is a little tough because the advice itself isn't the worst. But I wanted to change it a little bit. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Fake it till you make it. Don't fake it till you break it. I wrote it like that because it rhymes. Did you pick up on that?
I'm familiar with rhyming.
Okay, yeah, okay, cool. So what do you think?
I think that I want you to explain it to me.
Okay, I'll put it this way. Faking confidence and competence can be great, right? In the workplace or in a date, for example. But I feel like it's always a good idea to put a little work in simultaneously. Like familiarize yourself with whatever you're faking. Like if you wrote proficient in Spanish on a resume, why not like download Duolingo and teach yourself a little bit? Like enough to get by.
Yeah, I think there's a middle ground there. You don't want to just hardcore lie about everything. If you're quote unquote proficient in a language, you should at least learn a little bit of it. And also taking it as, if it is in the workplace, taking it as sort of a challenge upon yourself, like, okay, I got into the job because I said I could do this. Now I need to prove to them and myself that I'm capable of doing that. But you should go into it with the confidence that you can achieve the thing you lied about. Because otherwise, if you lied completely about your skills to get a job, and it's completely unrealistic to ever have those skills, you're fucked. It's going to be, every day is going to be a nightmare. You're going to be freaking out. You're in way over your head. And it's not worth it.
Yes, exactly. All right, dude, this is the part of the show where we ask our guests, you, what is the worst piece of advice that you've ever been given?
So one was a lot of, like, my teachers insisted I go to college and, you know, society tells you have to go to college. For me, I had no idea what I wanted to do in college. So it was just kind of a wasted year where I didn't make any money and in fact had to spend a bunch of money and spent the next several years paying off that money. I changed my major like 3 times. That's not to say that college isn't very valuable, depending on what you're trying to do. But me just taking that advice at face value and doing this thing because other people said it was the right thing to do kind of just backfired for me. I didn't really get anything out of it.
But do you also think that, I feel like sometimes that's a good thing when you're younger and your parents are like, just, you got to do this. And you're like, but why? And they're like, I'm not to say, you know, I think college was, I'm not saying that was a good or bad decision or whatever, but certain things, like when I was 18 and I was going to not go to college because I had a girlfriend in high school. My mom was like, in 5 years, you're going to regret doing that. I'm just telling, I know it seems like that's not the case right now, but trust me, it's going to be the case. And so you kind of just have to trust what society like tells you sometimes about things because, you know, it's been done over and over and over again. Again, I this is not college specific, but I'm just saying like there are other things.
Yeah, I also think that to grade my college experience as a total failure and waste of time just because I didn't finish is, you know, that's not looking at the whole picture. I think I had a good time. I learned a lot about myself. It's not just like, well, I didn't get my degree, so I wasted all that money. I think it was still a valuable experience for me. And who knows? I think I'm a big believer in everything happens for a reason. I think it's easy to look back on the things that you did or the things that happened to get you to the point you're at. And I love where I'm at in my life. So all of those mistakes I made at some point, I'm happy to have those because they led me to where I am now.
No regrets.
That's right. That's what I was going to say. Instead of everything else, I was just going to say no regrets.
But also, no regrets.
No regrets. The other bad advice, and I guess that's not even bad advice. This one is similar. When I was like 19, I'd been working for a little bit. Or I guess I was 20 at this point because I had that whole year of college, came back, worked for a little bit. And I was ready to buy my own car. And I was told that the smart thing to do, the financially responsible thing to do, is to buy an old car for cheap and just maintain it and do everything you can and you'll save money because you don't need to buy like a newer car. And for some people, that's true. But you got to make sure that the old car you're buying has been taken care of by the people you're buying it from.
Okay.
I bought a 2001 Nissan Altima for like $2,000. And then I took it to a mechanic. They were like, oh, you got to get all this shit done. I was like, crap. So I put like $1,400 more into it. So I'm well over $3,000 into this car at that point, thinking, okay, you know what? I put all this work into it. It'll be a good car. I got like 2 months out of that thing. It was so fucked. I realized it had had like 10 different owners. I'm pretty sure there was serious water damage in there at some point, which is why I would drive it. I'd be like stopped at a red light. Light would turn green. I'd go to accelerate and the whole car would like jolt before accelerating. Every time I thought I was about to like, explode or something, it was terrifying. And so after basically I paid $3,500 to rent the world's shittiest car for 4 months. And
then I what was the advice?
The advice was just to, instead of buying, like investing in a newer car, it was like, you will get more.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Just like you can get good value out of an old car.
Right.
Rather than just wanting to buy something new because it's newer. And I wasted all that money and then ended up trading that in for the car I currently have, which is a 2012 Civic. And I got $500 for my Altima.
$500?
That's how bad it was. And this is back when I was making like $9 an hour. So that was like everything I had worked for just down the drain.
Oh,
and I
could
have just put all that money into like the down payment of, the newer car, which has treated me very well for the past 5 or 6 years or whatever.
But it's pretty incredible that you can drive a car to the point of being worthless.
And that's the thing about that advice is that plenty of people have old cars with like 250,000 miles and they work great, but that's because they're taking care of them. For me, it was like, I bought it from this like shady ass dealer. It was like,
what are we talking? Craigslist? Oh, we're talking dealer.
Well, it was Craigslist, but okay. it was a dealer on Craigslist. And we met on a Sunday, like, outside of the dealership. So maybe, I don't know. The whole thing about it's just like so many red flags that I chose to ignore because I didn't know any better.
He's like, I just forgot the keys. We can't get into the actual dealership, but this is mine.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, he probably wasn't even associated with the dealership.
It's all Porsches and Aston Martins. And he's like, this is what I'm usually flipping, but this is,
I'll let you have this bad boy, this Altima over here. Yeah.
Okay, speaking of bad advice given, here's the lightning round. I'm going to name two people of note, and you have to tell me who you'd rather take advice from. In this scenario, you have to take advice from one of them and explain to me why you're choosing one over the other. Okay, your wife or the Dalai Lama?
So it's just the person I'm getting the advice from. I don't know what the advice is.
You have to, yeah, that's a good point. Advice about anything.
Okay, well, advice about anything. my wife.
Because she's an angel and I love you, baby, if you're listening.
I love you. No, I'd probably take advice from the Dalai Lama. I mean, straight up. I mean, I'm not going to. She'll understand. She gets it.
Greta Thunberg or the Cash Me Outside girl?
Greta Thunberg.
Right, because she's smart.
Yeah. And the Cash Me Outside girl, well, we don't know.
She has good music.
I
like her music.
Does she have songs besides Cash Me Outside?
Yeah, you never. She's like a big artist now.
What?
Yes.
Who let that happen?
She's Daniel Bregoli, right? What's her fucking artist name?
Oh, is it like
Bad Baby? Bitch? Bad Baby. Yeah, Bad Baby. Yeah.
That's
geeked,
right.
Doing like Geeked Up. You know that song? That's her. Anyways, I would pick her.
Okay. What do you think her advice would be?
Well, I mean, it depends what we're asking her. What do you think? Like, what would we ask her?
She asks you, hey, Cody, you come across a dead body in the middle of the road. Wait, that's not advice.
She's asking, is that a riddle, it feels like.
Yeah. Never mind. This is hurting my brain.
All right, next. Simon Cowell post scooter accident. So he's giving you advice in a body cast or one of the Queer Eye guys, but not tan, unfortunately.
I guess one of the queer eye guys.
Okay.
And I would just hope it's fashion advice. You know, if it's advice on how to like swindle your way into the music industry, then I made the wrong decision. But we'll see.
Pete Davidson while he was married to Ariana Grande or Pete Davidson post-marriage?
Definitely post-marriage. Both of them have described that period as like a, that was weird that we did that. And then now he seems to have really gotten his shit together. I'm actually a big fan of Pete Davidson. I think he's funnier than people. And a lot of people don't like him because Ariana stands kind of bandwagon some hate. But I think I like him. So I would take his advice now.
Yeah, I would take his advice now too. He's also like, he just did a movie. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, he's kind of like blowing up in Hollywood now. Well, he was before, but now he's like, he's got like a feature film out, you know?
Yeah. And it's more like his own merit rather than just by association.
Yes. And I take advice from people based on their celebrity status usually.
Yeah.
So he's bigger now than he was back then. So that's why I trust his opinion more because he's more of a celebrity.
That's why I chose the Dalai Lama.
Yes, of course. Harry Styles or Millie Bobby Brown?
Harry Styles. Okay. Sorry, Millie, you're a kid.
DJ Khaled or Tim Cooke?
DJ Khaled.
Yeah, DJ Khaled for sure.
Yeah, I don't know why I even hesitated. Of course.
Donald Glover or Childish Gambino?
I guess Childish Gambino. He's got more of an edge.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know if that.
You know, it's the same guy, right?
I know it's the same guy, but that's right. That's why I'm like, well, I'm trying to figure out what the difference would be if he's in character. I know that they're the same.
It's the same dude.
I know it's the same guy.
Yeah.
That's why
I
thought it was like a trick question. Man, I'm so embarrassed right now. This is worse than your intro debacle.
Oh, fuck you, man. All right, before we call this one, we like to ask our guests one final question. We've already talked about the worst advice you've received, but what is the worst advice you've ever given someone?
Yeah, I've had a couple days to think about this, and I have no idea. And I realized I don't give anyone advice. No one asked me for advice. I don't have anything valuable to tell them.
And that could potentially be the worst advice or the best advice that you could give is nothing at all.
Yeah, I mean, in this case, I guess it's the worst. Assuming people were really hoping for some good advice and I have nothing to offer them, it's kind of the worst case scenario. So
I guess that in itself is really bad advice. So that kind of totally works. There's some kid listening right now like, what would Drew do? Please tell me. I'm at a crossroads in my life. What should I do, Drew? And you're like,
just shrug with like a balloon sound effect or something, or like a
pew.
Yeah, just a pew. I don't know.
A cartoon little. I don't know, man.
Yeah, that's all I got for you. Sorry.
That's perfect. That's like really poetic in a sense.
Sure.
Now that you're married, do you find that mutual friends come to you for advice as like a package deal, like you and your wife, or do they come to her more?
I think in that scenario, they would be asking a question to both of us, but they're putting more stock into Amanda's answer. Okay. So I think, I'm just kind of there.
Because they know you're not going to say anything.
Yeah, I'm just going to, arms crossed, silence. I might even like give them a mean glare.
Yeah. You're there just to go, what she said.
Yeah, what she said. Yeah. Wasn't listening.
Yeah, I agree with my wife.
Mm-hmm. I love my wife.
And I love my wife as well.
Let the record show.
Drew, I got fired. What should I do? I just love my wife, man.
I love my wife so much, man. She means the world to me, dog. Like, shit.
You know what I would do? I would get a wife if I were you.
But not mine. By me.
Perfect. Well, there you have it, folks. Another open and shut case. That's what I do best. Faking it till you make it can be largely positive slash beneficial, especially if you're trying to buy yourself some time until your skill set catches up to your mindset. Just make sure you're not cosplaying a profession you have no intention of learning or your ass is going to get caught. I want to thank Drew for coming on today. Thank you so much, man. It's great to see you. Great to talk to you. Is there anything you want to plug?
No, I just want to reveal that I was faking this entire podcast. I have been a cardboard cutout this entire time. The real Drew is sound asleep in his bed.
Holy heck. Mm-hmm. We got played, folks. And again, that might be even more poetic of an ending than your non-advice segment. So that's thank you for coming on, cardboard cutout of Drew. I appreciate you. And tell Drew I say hi.
I can't. I can't speak. I can on this podcast, but I can't in real life. It's complicated. Hey, check out Drew's YouTube channel.
Drew Gooden on YouTube, everyone. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, man. You having trouble with life? Well, let me give you some advice.
The Pleasure is Ours is a production of iHeartRadio and Trojan Brand, hosted by me, Cody Ko. The podcast is executive produced by Ethan Fixell, produced and written by Jonathan Grimm, written by Dave Adute, and engineered, edited, and mixed by Matt Stillo. Our theme song was composed by me, Cody Ko, with additional music by Brad Kemp at Second Bedroom Studio. If you haven't already subscribed, rated, or reviewed The Pleasure is Ours, please do so on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts, baby. Thanks again for tuning in to The Pleasure is Ours, presented by Trojan Brand Condoms. That's a wrap for our episode, and also, you should be wrapping it up in the bedroom. I'm talking, of course, about your penis. You know, when you're out there doing your thing, you gotta be safe, and you gotta get a condom that works for you. If you ever hear a guy complaining about condoms, it's likely because he's been uncomfortable using the wrong fit. He probably doesn't even know that Trojan has over 30 different size and shape varieties to solve all condom fit issues. So pick up a box of Trojan condoms wherever you get your condoms, and maybe even a second box that you've been wanting to try out. Look at you, you fucking sex lord. Go for it, buddy. See you next time.